C1M, number 12B.
That's the belief. Naturally, this is a belief that comes up the moment we touch the tone of life here, where she says, well, really, to be married is, should be to be married to one's own individuality and not to another being. And then the belief can come up, well, then the world will die out if there is no more marriage. And with it comes the belief, couldn't there be propagation without marrying, without sex? And so the belief of agamogenesis or parthenogenesis, which exists in various classes of insects and so on, could also apply to the human species. And here she takes up and says, as a sort of insanity, the perpetuation of the floral species by bud or cell division is evident, but I discredit the belief that agamogenesis applies to the human species. So she takes up the question of life, and we can understand it really better in connection with what she speaks afterwards, namely, the question creeps up and says, well, if there is no marriage, if marriage is not a fixed fact among humankind, then the world is going to die out. And humanly seen, this is true. But divinely seen, this is not true. Because the only propagation is in life. And so, right afterwards, she takes up that question of love as truth, in love as truth, where she deals with that. She says, Christian science presents unfoldment, not accretion. Propagation is accretion. It manifests no material growth, that's the propagation of mortals, no material growth from molecule to mind, but an impartation of the divine mind to man and the universe. Proportionately, as human generation ceases, the unbroken links of eternal, harmonious being will be spiritually discerned. See, now she comes to the unbroken links of eternal, harmonious being and shows them to be something which is invested in God and not in a material propagation. And man, not of the earth, earthly, but quite a different man, but coexistent with God, will appear. See, now again you have the sense that something will appear. That Jesus said that really the millennium will come in when women stop bearing children. Well, that's an ultimate, that's a state of which Mrs. Eddy said in that article on wedlock, is the stage when absolute Christian science will be reached. She just shows that we don't have to fear that the whole world will go down when we no more have progenies on a human material plane. But that the world of being, of real existence, is a world of ideas and not a world of bodies. And so the fear that through this process which has been presented up to this point, the fear that through this process marriage will be stopped and even asexual reproduction like agamogenesis is not allowed, and is a belief, and therefore is out of the question, that the world will just become one empty concept. That's the fear. And she masters this belief of that by showing, oh no, because As we go on in this understanding, though it may be in the future and in the future generation, as we go on in that, we will awake. We will see that man is something which existed forever, is coexistent with God, has existed before Abraham was, and will ever exist, because it is quite a different aspect. That all really, what we call man, is just a mortal, and that mortality will disappear into nothingness, that's true. But instead of that, in place of that, will appear that which is real to spiritual consciousness. Which is real to spiritual consciousness. We may, at some stage, not yet, realize what it is, but the more one is acquainted and friendly with spiritual ideas, the more natural they become and tangible they become, the more one sees that the real universe is that universe which is incorporeal. Now, just that she doesn't go very far in showing the nature of man here. What she only wants to show here is that love will draw man to the realization that man's life is spiritual, that man's life is not corporeal, and because man's life is spiritual, that it has existed and does exist and will exist in eternity, and that we don't need to have any fear that going this way of life will lead us to an empty space and to an empty concept, but that man's coexistence with God will appear. God's children already created will be cognized. It's always that sense of will which comes in, because love is possible. And that's our comfort. The comfort is this, that we see that as we culture the sense of the chapter on marriage, which step by step in the transitional stage, in the temporal stage, brings us one step further and further and further, that it also will come a moment where that last error will fall, namely that we think that creation will die out because there is no human propagation. That error will fall. And love will provide us with that consciousness of truth which can perceive man's eternal existence as intact, where the links of eternal harmonious being will be spiritually discerned. It lies in the nature of love that it always will give us a full compensation for anything which we have to sacrifice, to lay down. And so, in the measure as the human mind is weaned away from the belief that life is corporeal, and therefore that life is only eternal if it is corporeally reproduced, in the measure as that human belief ceases, the eternal links of harmonious being will be discerned. Isn't that love? That it gives always a compensation. Always a compensation. And that compensation is always higher and more beautiful than what we have sacrificed on the altar. Here again she speaks a lot about the loss which first has to take place before we gain. That's so important. You see, she says, proportionately as human generation ceases, that's the loss, the unbroken links of eternal harmonious being will be discerned, spiritually discerned. Or she says, only as mortals lose the sense of sin and disease, do they gain the sense of health. It shows how love first forces us to let go, to lose something. But that the losing of the wrong is always the gain of the right. It's always a compensation. Love always has a compensation. She says, by losing the belief that man is a creator, can God's children, as already created, be cognized? As the false and material disappears, again the loss, the real, ideal man appears. We always have that balancing in that whole thing. Or she says, no longer to marry or to be given in marriage, the loss of getting married. Well, that opens man's continuity and the sense of increasing number in God's infinite plan. So let's see that, which is a very practical thing. It says, first must be the loss, and then the gain. See, the patient that comes to us always says the other way around. He says, all right, if I gain my health, I will study. It's always the other way. The fullness of being is always a present state. But as he has shown, it is always hidden through our false, by thrusting in false concepts. So that which is already here and now and present and eternally existent will only be gained as we put away that which tries to hide this fullness. First must be the loss of it. That's why before marriage comes the Atonement and Eucharist, which asks us to lose, to sacrifice the false sense. And then in marriage, as we lose it, the fullness of it appears. The fullness of it appears. Well, I have only 5 minutes, and so I must take the last paragraph quickly. I think the last paragraph is love as love. I'm not so quite sure about it, but that doesn't really matter. She ends it up by saying that as the true man then appears, then marriage becomes obsolete. That's the last point. She shows how shall this universal sense of man appear? And she says, through spiritual education. She puts a great stress of spiritual education. If Christian Science educate their own offspring spiritually well, then they can educate others spiritually and not conflict with the scientific sense of God's creation. See, at the moment we see that man is a spiritual proposition, then we can be father and mother to everyone. We can educate them spiritually without conflicting with the usual sense of relationship between between parents and child. And then someday the child will ask. See, again, will ask. The whole subject of love is always dominated with. You just watch when you read it through, that term will comes in again, because love will. It's in the plan of love, in the intention of love, in the design of love, that love will draw men to herself, no matter what comes. Hell or high water. But the last point it will do is that it will make the child ask the question of origin. It will ask, well, what then is really my origin? Do you keep the first commandment? Do you have one God and creator? Or is man a creator? The first paragraph, the first section in this chapter was that man shall be a creator, and that marriage is that institution where man shall be a creator. And he says it's legitimate until absolute Christian Science is reached. So here she comes to that sense where love will work on that proposition and not let go until we awake finally to the point and say, after all, who are my parents? Who are my parents? Do you have one God and creator, or is man a creator? If the father replies, God creates man through man, the child may ask, do you teach that spirit, grace materially? Or do you declare that spirit is infinite? Therefore, matter is out of the question. She doesn't answer it. She leaves it at the question because the answer is in the fourth chapter. The answer to the whole thing, where she asks, well, is spirit infinite and is matter out of the question, that's the pith, really, of the fourth chapter, where the fourth chapter starts right in with the marginal note, the infinite one spirit. And only in the fourth chapter, she for the first time says that matter is nothing. Up to now, she never has done that. This will be one of the most interesting studies which we can make to see how Mrs. Eddy uses those most important terms which we always use in explaining science. How she uses terms like idea, mortal mind, illusion, matter, substance, human. How she uses these terms through the chapters. And we will be amazed what we will find. We'll namely be amazed to find that she never has said up to now that matter is nothing or not real. Never. Three whole chapters she spoke about matter, but she never said what matter is, that matter is nothing. But we, when we talk to a beginner, the first thing we say, matter is nothing. And he gets so furious. And he's right, he does. He's so right, he does. But when we will investigate how these main terms are introduced gently, slowly, lovingly to the reader, then we will perhaps learn how to approach the beginner in a more loving way and not to shock him in the first sentence with the nothingness of matter, that matter is no substance and so on, but to introduce it as she has done it. And perhaps when we go through the chapter on spiritualism, we may have time to take one or the other of these terms and see how she gently introduces them. There is one big plane in them. I don't know how she ever could write them down, except that she just listened and didn't put any of her human thinking into that whole book. That she put her whole human thinking out of the way and just let that revelation go through her and write it down. Well, that brings us to the end of the chapter on marriage. And next time I will begin with the chapter on spiritualism. But the chapter on spiritualism is a big chapter, an enormous chapter. And something so new and so different from these first three chapters, because it gives now the explication, the science of what has been indicated in these first three chapters. I have a wish that those who can do it to come already on the Saturday next time, I would invite them to take that opportunity, because I may have to take some of the time of Saturday already to introduce at least the fourth chapter, or at least to give the main aspect of the position of that chapter, and that would make it much easier. Though I try to keep to the original plan that the actual text I will take on Sunday.